Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around. Welcome back to Hacks and Hobbies. I'm your host, Junaid, and today's guest is a true pioneer in purpose-driven entrepreneurship. Nicole Dar is an autism mom who turned her frustration into innovation. Faced with the lack of effective treatment options for her daughter, she founded Success on the Spectrum, the very first autism treatment franchise in the U.S. Her mission: to give families access to quality therapy while helping aspiring entrepreneurs build businesses with both profit and purpose. Today, we'll hear how she turned a deeply personal challenge into a nationwide movement. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm so honored.
I am absolutely excited to speak with you on this topic because it is a powerful one. Right, what you did by finding a solution for not just yourself, but people all over the nation is supremely inspiring. And I think you mentioned that you accidentally did that.
It was not planned at all. But, you know, when destiny calls, I don't think you can escape it.
Amen. Amen. Nicole, so many entrepreneurs start with a business idea, and yours began with a mission. And a personal one at that, just like we talked about. Can you take us back to when you first realized something needed to change in the autism treatment space?
Absolutely. So my daughter was diagnosed with moderate severe autism. And when that happens, the doctor usually tells you, go seek out ABA therapy, because that is the golden standard treatment for autism symptoms. And so we did. We found an ABA clinic that was willing to help her. And there were just a few things that weren't jiving with me. You know, I had a female child. She was nonverbal. And they would not let parents go inside. They would take your child in and you wouldn't get to see them until the end of the day. And it was very, you know, nerve-wracking. You dropping your kid off with this stranger, and if anything happens to her, she can't express or communicate that with you. And it's terrifying as a parent. You don't want anything bad happening to her. You want to protect her. And so I didn't like that aspect of it, but the ABA therapy did do wonders for her. And she learned how to make eye contact, and she learned how to speak and potty trained and learned how to feed herself. She tried different foods. She made her first friend.
Nice.
It was incredible. But at age 7, they said, sorry, no more ABA therapy. You're aged out. Sayonara. And what most ABA centers want is to make the child the problem of the school system instead of their clinic. And so I had a very, very hard time finding anyone who would take her after 7, and she wasn't ready for school. So the whole idea behind the business was to create a space just for my daughter and maybe a few other kids, maybe one or two other kids, to be welcomed after the age of 7, to continue getting the services and the support that they so needed. And I created a space where parents could come in and watch the live stream cameras of the kids doing therapy. So not only are the parents learning and watching and trusting everything, the kids are getting what they need too. I felt like it was a win-win.
Now that's really powerful, especially the part about not being able to be part of that treatment or not being able to see what's going on. You're leaving your child with a stranger, because even when you take your children to, or your child to, a doctor, you know, you're there with the doctor and the doctor is communicating with you, and then maybe they'll communicate with a child if they can speak and respond and whatnot. Like, yeah, so it's really important to have that connection, because they are our flesh and blood, right? We want nothing bad to happen to them. So I love that you integrated all the things that you were that you were feeling that there were these huge gaps, right, in this treatment options. So once you create the system, or what were the biggest gaps outside of, you know, you not being able to be there with your child?
Opening my own clinic was all terrifying because there's no one there to teach you how to do this kind of stuff. And I didn't have any experience in the ABA field. I just had experience with my one child. So every child is different. Every clinic is going to be different based on the clinics that they have inside. And I had to learn a lot. I didn't know how to get in network with insurances. I didn't know how to create a claim and submit that to health insurance. And I self-taught everything. I read books. I did a lot of Googling, some YouTube watching. I even filed my own trademark and patent and did everything all myself because I started with such a small budget and I just figured doing it myself would be better. But the, you know, everything was good. The process went well. The clinic opened. We got more kids. Everything just jived. The parents were loving what they were seeing from their kids. I was loving what I was seeing from my kid. It was all good until I got more and more and more and more and more calls. And I couldn't fit them all. And suddenly I was the person on the other side of the phone saying, I'm sorry, we can't take your kid. And I felt horrible. And I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to turn these kids away because I knew what it felt like. So I opened a second clinic and I expanded into two different ones. Yeah. And I thought, ooh, I'll make the second one twice as big and that'll solve it, right? Absolutely not.
No.
I had a waiting list again within 9 months. And what I discovered was that so many kids not only have been diagnosed with autism, but more and more kids almost exponentially are being diagnosed with autism every year. And the number of clinics opening up is not keeping up with that pace. And the demand is so big that I couldn't solve this problem by myself.
Mm-hmm. So what was the next step? What did you do? How did you solve the problem? I mean, it's a problem that's going to continue to grow because we have new kids coming into the system. We have new kids being born literally every single day.
It was an incredible discovery that so many kids need this and so many kids don't have access to it because of either waiting lists or they don't have a clinic near them. I am just one person. I couldn't open up enough clinics to help all these kids. And so I decided to found the very first franchise model in the entire United States, possibly the world, who knows?
Yeah.
And that was also scary because I've never franchised anything before. And it was kind of a figure things out as you go. And you want your franchisees to have as much support as they can so they don't have to make the expensive mistakes that I did.
Yeah.
But the goal is with more hands on deck, you can open more clinics faster than one person could by themselves, or even faster than a private equity company could, because they're all separate, individually owned businesses that are taken care of by their person that's on site who loves it. Yeah. And I'm very happy to say that to this day, we have 75 open locations right now across 18 different states, and a fourth of them are autism parents just like me.
That's so amazing. I mean, creating that system and then empowering the people or empowering the parents who want to support or who want to provide the support for their children. I think that's the number one thing. And if we see that, you know, how are there 3 billion people in the world using iPhones, right? It's because there's systems in place that they created and like, hey, now you can to run and use this. Now, talk to me about this, Nicole. You mentioned that fourth of the people that are running these organizations or franchises are parents. How did being a parent for you shape your approach differently than what a traditional healthcare entrepreneur would? Because you did mention something around private equities would take a lot longer. So talk to me about your approach on being a parent.
Yeah. So the majority of ABA businesses that exist today are private equity owned groups. Bunch of people piling their money into one company that opens a bunch of clinics and they crank out profit as fast as they can to give returns to their investors. And so their main priority is those profits. Without those profits, without their investors being happy, they would cease to exist. And so these clinics don't prioritize the kids. If a child needs a specific toy because of a certain skill that he's learning or trying to learn, they may not allocate a budget for that because it's not important to them. They may as well kick that kid out and get an easier one in.
Sure.
And the easier kids are usually the cute little small ones that everybody loves to play with, and all you're doing is teaching them to talk. The more difficult kids are the older ones, the aggressive ones that are stronger and is just as big as you. I mean, we've had 12-year-olds that were 6 foot tall, and I'm looking up at them, you know, fussing. So it's difficult for a private equity group to justify accepting kids like that. And so the difference with us is we prioritize our mission, which is to help whatever kids we can, and hopefully the ones that need it the most. And I really feel that having autism parents as owners, it's a no-brainer. When when you're this faceless corporate entity and someone submits a request to buy a new playground or whatever, they're just going to be like, oh, it doesn't matter, no. But if you're looking at this kid in the face and you see how much he loves to climb and he's climbing on dangerous things and you want to give him an appropriate place to climb, that's a no-brainer for me. Yeah, of course I'll just go out and buy some playground equipment and he'll use it, and maybe the next kid will use it.
Yeah.
And so really prioritizing the child instead of the profits is what makes us wildly different. Having the owner present and caring and being able to speak to them and reason with them instead of them being some faceless entity really gives that mom and pop feel to the clinics, but you have the support and the training and the guidance of the franchising company behind your back.
Man, that's so powerful. So you went from an mom to franchise founder, right? You created these solutions. You You facilitated, but not just facilitated, you also invited people in, right? And to, hey, come work together. Let's work together to to find a solution and create these solutions for kids. Now, you've said your franchise helps entrepreneurs make a profit with purpose. You know, a lot of the people that are running, they're also parents. But talk to us about how do you balance business growth with the mission of serving families?
A lot of people have the desire to open their own business. And a lot of people go with what they're familiar with, and that makes sense, right? If you want to open your own business, you know that if you open a Pizza Hut, it's going to be profitable, because if it weren't, why would there be so many of them? And it's very familiar. It's very easy. The concept of pizza is simple, but it doesn't have that purpose behind it. Yeah. So if people are looking for a business that is both profitable, because you need to make money, but also serves that greater purpose, that greater good, that makes you go into the world and leave it a better place than when you've arrived.
Amen.
It's harder to find those types of businesses. And most of the time, I would say a do-good business usually isn't as profitable as you would like. But because ABA therapy is a mandatory, medically essential service, all health insurance companies pay for ABA therapy. So if I would offer... if I would open a daycare, I could bring kids in. I could charge the parents $2,000-$4,000 a month. If they couldn't afford it, they drop out or they stick you on the bill. With us, health insurance pays an average of $10,000 a month per child. So it's very good money. And we don't have to charge the parents a thing. It is contractually guaranteed by the insurance companies to be paid. I don't have to chase parents. I don't have to pick the rich parents over the poor parents. I don't have to pick, you know, if dad loses his job, the kid is still covered. So it's essentially recession-proof business that follows and helps a very good mission, but is also extremely profitable.
Yeah.
And it checks all the boxes, but so few people know about this industry. It's not like they're going out and searching for this.
Sure.
So this is a huge business opportunity with huge demand and awesome potential that I invite anybody who is an aspiring business owner that's considering opening a childcare or a daycare or even an educational facility to look into this as an alternative.
Wow, Nicole, you've opened my mind in ways I didn't even imagine, right? Here's a question for you. So you've mentioned ABA multiple times, and for those who do not know, listening, who does not know what that stands for, can you please expand?
ABA stands for Applied Behavior Analysis, and it is the golden standard treatment for autism symptoms. Mm-hmm. And it's not the kind of therapy where you lay in a chair and tell someone about all of your problems. ABA therapy is simply a method of nonverbal teaching. Mm-hmm. And we're going to teach the child whatever it is that they need to know, because every child is different and they struggle with different things. Yeah. But the main categories are going to be your communication skills, your social skills, and your life adaptive skills, or independence skills, as we like to call them.
I absolutely love that. Now, can anybody go get training on ABA, or is it specific individuals that have to go through a certain training program?
To do ABA therapy, you have to be a board certified behavior analyst, which takes a master's degree and a certification and a license. Mm-hmm. But to own an ABA clinic, there are no restrictions. Mm. So it's like if you wanted to own a dentist's office, but you weren't a dentist yourself, you would just open the business, buy the chairs, lease the building, and hire the dentist to come in and pay them out of the profits. Mm. And that's exactly what we're doing with ABA therapy. The CEOs have a 40-hour a week job within their own clinics, and you are essentially serving as HR of your own company. You're doing the hiring and the firing, the payroll and the bookkeeping and all of that stuff.
Sure.
And your hired employees, the licensed medical professionals, are the ones that are actually performing the therapy with the kids. And wow. The special part about ABA therapy versus any other method of teaching, because there's American schools and Montessori schools and things that educate children, right? But we are one-on-one. So every kid gets their own teacher at all times. And you don't have to hire certified teachers. We hire just your entry-level technicians that are trained by your behavior analyst.
Wow, that's really powerful, especially knowing the models that are out there and what's available to people around the world for the support, or around the U.S. or parents with kids with autism. You know, it's really important. Talk to me about, how do you train franchise owners to uphold the mission that your company pushes forward?
Our franchising company offers a ton of support and a lot of handholding, because we know that ABA is not a field that most people are familiar with. And so they're going to be learning everything from scratch. And so we teach you how to open the business, how to open a business checking account, how to hire your first employee, all the templates that we have, the offer letters, the health insurance claims training. We have training for absolutely everything. And we're going to make sure that you're comfortable knowing exactly what you're doing and how to run your own business. But because you're not familiar with the actual clinical aspect of ABA therapy, the franchising company has several BCBAs on staff, and we do audits every 6 months. So essentially, we come in and we do performance evaluations on all of your key staff and hand that report back to you and say, this person needs more training on this. Can we offer that to you? This is what we suggest to improve the pipeline of this or that. And we really look in depth at everything to help your business run as well as it can, efficiently as it can. And of course, still following all the mission and guidelines that we have in place to keep the quality high.
I absolutely love that, Nicole. This has been really powerful. Talking with you and learning more about the system that you've put in place and training others with the company that you created. And of course, founding the Success on the Spectrum platform for others to utilize and benefit from. For someone listening right now who wants to build a business around their mission, what's the first step that they should take?
Anytime you want to form a business, it needs to check certain boxes. It, of course, has to be a viable business that's able to make money. It's got to follow the mission. But you have to know that when building a business, especially if you want to scale, just one person can't do anything. Mm-hmm. So the best advice I can give to any business owner is to surround yourself with a team of people that know differently than you do and you respect enough to take advice from. One person doesn't know everything, and you have to trust a hand-selected group of people to help build something from the ground up. I was very lucky to have very good people that helped me build the clinical aspect side of things. And I had the background knowledge to do the business side of things. And together we were able to make a whole company that had everything that it needed to survive. And it's so important that big-headed CEOs accept the fact that they don't know everything and they do need help.
Amen. I love it. Follow up on, how do you stay resilient when your mission is personal and the stakes are so high? Because that's something that you had to go through, right? Your stakes are so high. Like, how do you do this? So talking about, how do you stay resilient?
I think it's easy to stay resilient in an industry like this, because in other industries, you don't get that personal fulfillment out of it. You don't get a reward other than the money. If I were making pizza, I would only feel good about it when the checks came in.
Sure.
But even if I went broke doing this, watching a kid say, "I love you, mom," for the first time, watching him try a new food other than a chicken nugget for the first time in years, watching a little boy brush his own teeth for the first time by himself, it is so powerful. And not only do I relive all those moments that I had with my daughter, but there's not a dry eye in the room. The moms are crying, the techs are crying, you're crying, everybody's crying, because it's just so beautiful. And even if I made no profit at all, I would still feel good about waking up and going to work every day. It just so happens that I have everything. I have it all.
Cole, I absolutely love it. Thank you so much for showing us that building a profitable business doesn't mean compromising purpose. You've proven that when the mission comes first, the business can flow and thrive. And for those listening, if you've ever felt like your personal story could be the foundation for a business, Nicole's journey is your blueprint. Thank you so much, Nicole, for coming on.
Thank you very much, Janaid.
All right. And guys, make sure to follow Nicole. Nicole, where can our audience connect with you and learn more about your program?
The best place to learn more information is from our website, sosfranchising.com. We also have our YouTube channel, and you can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, all the places.
Perfect, perfect. We'll be sure to include the links in the show notes. Guys, thank you. Thank you so much again, Nicole, for coming on.
Very much. I'm so pleased to be here.
Absolutely. Guys, start with the problem that you care about most. Build a system that protects your mission, and don't be afraid to think bigger than you imagine. If you need any additional support and connection, be sure to connect with Nicole through her links that are provided below. And we'll see you in part two, where we go deeper into what it takes to build a franchise with Nicole. All right. Thank you, and we'll catch you in the next one. Thank you for listening to Hacks and Hobbies. You can find additional information on the guest today on their website, hacksandhobbies.com. Please feel free to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on upcoming interviews with amazing guests.